do the Sue deal here. Great idea by Mike. We're going to do Sealess Sundays.
Sealess Sundays.
So just add a little more Sealess into your lives.
The cultivator of comic culture and cosplay culture.
Cosplay culture, yes. All right, Miss Sue. Yes, so we figure it's like we need to give you guys more Sealess. So, you know, Tuesdays was great. And remember last year we were doing two a week. Like, okay, maybe there's more we could do to get to the fans. And yeah, Sealess Sundays is a pretty solid idea.
I agree. The more Sealess out there, the better for all.
The better for all. All right. Welcome to the show. Hello, Miso. Hello, Mike. How is everybody doing today?
Well, just let you know, Tuesday I had surgery on my hand. So I'm really a trooper out there. Let you know. I'm doing this without any painkillers.
Damn. Okay. All right. What did you get surgery for, if you mind me asking?
I had a little cyst that was growing big and was pushing the bones apart. So they had to remove the cyst and put the bones back.
Put the bones back. Okay, how big was the cyst? Was it like the size of a tennis ball, a golf ball?
It was about the size of a quarter. Remember, there's not that much room in the little tiny hand.
Right. I figure since you had the little skin condition when the last time I seen you, I didn't know that was another item that you had an ailment for.
Yeah, I got more ailments than you can imagine.
Wow.
We could do a whole show on Mike's ailments.
I mean, we could pop you in Dr. Pimple Popper if we need
to. Exactly. Can I say something real quick to everyone out there that's watching us? This is a shameless plug for the Comic Capsule. I just got mine. They're shipping out. So everyone who was in the Kickstarter, you'll be glad to be getting them very soon. It's a wonderful product. I love it.
Yes, Comic Capsule is our friends. They are the new kid on the block as far as like comic protection. So give them a look at their Kickstarter page right now. Just look for Comic Capsule. It's one whole word. And then they should be, if you have ordered from the Kickstarter, they should be already shipping out.
That's my one and only shameless plug, okay, out there.
Shameless plug is always good with us because we're not getting any money for it. Gotta protect them comics. That's right, Miss So.
Protect them comics. Yes, Miss So. I agree.
Even if they're non-keys, if you love the art, you love the story, you wanna keep your comic from damage as far as like the sun, from wrinkling, from folding. Comic Capsule is your main go-to.
Yes.
Right now it's not waterproof, but I think they are working on that part as well. All right. So okay, let's see. And not right now we have where's my button?
I don't know.
All right, breaking news.
There it is, breaking news.
All right, so former Smash Mouth lead singer Steve Harwell is in hospice care. So sorry. Wow. Sorry to start. Wow.
Hey, now you're an all-star. Get your game on. Go play.
Yeah, it's you know he's only roughly two hits I know of from Smash Mouth, and it's sad to hear that the man had a liver failure and is on his last legs.
Yeah. So Jimmy Buffett just died the other day too. I'm not a parrot head, but. Got to give the man props for wasting away in Margaritaville.
That's right. Jimmy Buffett had passed away. And, wow. There's a few more that we lost this just these last 3 weeks. And it's been pretty sad.
Yeah, I agree. But don't worry. We won't bog down the show with death and destruction.
No.
Unless we're talking about comic books.
Prayers out to Steve and his family. Hopefully, maybe they can do something last minute in order to keep his life a little bit longer.
So, absolutely.
Yeah, let's just hope for the best. All right. So
that one song was a huge like football and baseball anthem, you know. So you heard it at all the stadiums all the time.
Not the cover they did. I'm a Believer, right? It's another song.
Hey, now I'm an All-Star.
All-Star, definitely. That's that's like a feel good song, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think it's more of a like a football type of I guess jock jam.
Jock, or, yeah, that's what it is—a jock jam, exactly.
A jock jam is more like you're inspired to do better. It seems like when you're saying you're an all star, it's just like, okay, after I'm done with all the playing, I'm feeling pretty good. It's an after the event kind of song.
It's like, you know, I never understood why Doctor Who was such a, I think it's Doctor Who, Tortoise, but that, but I don't see how that's such a jock jam, but it is.
Oh, the whole drum solo, that, yeah, that's more, I guess it's more like a hype song.
Yeah, it's a hype song.
There's nothing really, although the words are then and then and hey,
yeah, exactly. Hey,
there's no
hey, Red. Why don't you tell all the people what you listen to?
Talk to the mic,
okay? Well, let me tell you what I listen to when I'm in the car. I like EDM, it's hard to believe, but I do. I like 80s new wave, and I like The Time with Morris Day, thanks to Silent Bob and Jay. So yeah, that's what I listen to in the car. Nothing else besides look at all my comic books into my short boxes that I have hidden in there. But again, we're going to be talking about a couple. We're talking about one big movie that's came out, and it's been out for a little bit. But we're going to show the trailer, and then we're going to get into it. But just to give you a sneak peek, I like it.
Yeah, it wasn't bad at all. Let's remind ourselves of what was in the movie, and then let me pull up the trailer. And I think people already had enough time to really see it the last 3 to 4 weeks.
Yeah, I think we can spoil it if it needs to be spoiled.
I think we can spoil it now. It's definitely time to do it. Let's take a look at the
here's the trailer.
Trailer of Blue Beetle.
I want to fly. Oh, let's do this. Yeah! You gotta force it to come out.
What do you...
You're a genius.
What? I know. Hey, what'd I say?
No. Oh, did you know what was gonna happen to my brother? When you stuck him with this world-destroying thing?
It's called the Scarab. I had no idea it would activate. It has to choose you.
So how do we get it to unchoose me?
Host acquired.
Who said that?
Systems checking. 3.
Okay.
Two.
It's gonna be okay. Uptown, baby. I was down, but they
see I'm uptown, baby. Stop! Host overreacting.
Overreacting? You kidnapped me!
When I hit you with that, you know.
Threat approaching. Engaging host protection. Threat eliminated.
What do you think the government is going to do when they figure out that some kid has this military tech?
We are going to change the world with the power of the Scarab. It belongs to me.
Oh, he's pissed.
Listen to me!
Hotel, baby.
You got the wrong guy! I'm a nobody, but I swear!
The world is a place to protect.
I have an arsenal at my disposal.
Anything, please!
Watch and learn, Jaime. Whatever you can imagine, I can create.
Yeah, that's more like it.
That love you feel for your family makes you weak.
You're wrong. My family?
That's what makes me strong.
Oh, I forgot how bad it looks.
Target the family.
Sorry, my mom.
Jaime?
You are a superhero, cabrón.
Yo, y'all take shots, y'all aim up. Whoa!
You're the blue needle.
I could use that arsenal right about now!
God, you never ask.
Hell yeah. They've been trying to stop the way, don't stop! Bust it down, bust it down!
Nana? I advise we back away.
All right.
All right. There it was. I hope everyone out there in podcast land seen the movie. And if you're listening to us out here, put your comments in and let us know what you think and how you feel about it.
Let's start with you. What do you think of it overall, Mike?
I went into it, again, as a comic book fan. And then I realized after I sat down, I should watch this not as a comic book fan, as a 10-year-old boy who doesn't know anything. And I liked it. Even I liked the sappiness of the family and the you know, the family is love and love is power and love triumphs over all. And, you know, all that was great. I ate it up.
You ate it up. As far as, like, the action, the story, what did you think overall?
I like how they brought the old Blue Beetle in there, and you know, told him who he really was. He is another Batman character with weapons and whatnot, trying to you know, uncover the blue scarab. I didn't like how they kind of didn't go into where that scarab came from. You know, if you read the comic books, you know that came from an alien race that brought it down as no good. I did like that. You know, Jaime and the Scarab, you know, fought and didn't get along. Just like in the comic book, that Jaime doesn't really have control over it as he should, and vice versa. So I thought that was really good. The villain was just so. And Susan Sarandon, I think they probably overpaid her to get a star in the movie to get people to sit in the seats. But she was a meaningless character in the
She was really chewing up the scene for me, as far as like her being what's the word I'm looking for?
Great actress?
No, I mean like I guess just a bad guy. The actual the bad guy to the story, and really because the I don't know the other guy, I forgot the guy's name, but the one that has the red suit.
Omicron or whatever it was, the Omicron suit or Unicron suit.
The one man something army.
Yeah. Yeah. Then he tried to go like Arachnid, looked like an Arachnid at the end. Yeah. Yeah. That character is not in the comic book anywhere.
Okay.
I guarantee you.
I mean, it was a flawed character, really, you know, I guess you would say he was abused and had lost his mom, but then he was kind of like adopted or kidnapped from that point where she got killed by a cord missile. Yeah. And then, you know, I think he was just, in order for him to really survive, he had to do what Susan Sarandon wanted him to do.
Exactly. Yeah. But I thought he was more of a Iron Man character than anything. I think they kind of stole a little bit from Tony Stark, but
yeah,
DC steals from Marvel, and Marvel steals from DC. So
right. it looked like they took some of the aspects of a Whiplash from Iron Man 2.
Yes,
but with less of a character development because they had to squeeze so much movie in that they didn't really get to flesh out these characters even more. You find out in the middle of the movie where the Jaime is kind of like a pacifist, like he doesn't want to fight nor kill anybody.
But he is in the comic book too. He's not really a fighter in the comic book. I mean, later on he becomes, but when he first starts out, he's a member of the Teen Titans. He's definitely a pacifist.
Oh, okay. That makes sense because I have no idea what.
Okay. I'm sorry, Red.
No, that's fine. It's good to know that because, you know, I went in there just wanting to see, another superhero movie, and it's just, for me, it's like, you know, all this other stuff that's kind of come at me during this. This discussion is going to be new information. What did Mark say here? The Olmec angle was an Easter egg. Olmec was not tied to Carapax in the books. So Carapax was just an amalgamation of another storyline or like,
thanks. I didn't know that either.
And then the last moment with his was a badass sacrifice must be made for the greater good.
Yeah,
that was an actual great sacrifice. I'm not sure if Susan Sarandon's character had survived that, but I wouldn't be surprised if she also put that tech in herself
or correct
to in that movie. So
correct. I'm thinking they're gonna come out with a Teen Titan movie. I just got this feeling. I don't know what DC is doing, but I mean, they got this character. They can't put him quite in the Justice League quite yet.
Yeah.
He's a member now, but he wasn't a member for a long time. So are they going to come out with a Teen Titans movie? I would love to see that.
It's, I mean, they kind of loosely connected it to the DC universe already, but saying that Batman's a fascist.
Right.
Anything other than that, they're in some, I guess, Latin Nation. Pat, I can't remember the name, but it looked really far off into the future, but yet still kind of grounded between the current present.
Can I make an observation?
Yeah, go ahead.
You've watched Watchmen, of course. Didn't the owlcraft look a lot like the Blue Beetle?
It did. I think they borrowed some of that stuff from the same animator.
Yeah, exactly.
ILM, they just recycled some of that stuff.
And they just skinned it blue and they flew it.
It seems like a lot of that CGI stuff was really low budget, and that they still made it work. I mean,
yeah, I thought the CGI worked really good, especially with the hook gun that shot the hooks that put them down to the ground. I thought that looked really cool.
Yeah. Again, that's him being part of as a pacifist. I mean, did it have that in the book?
Yeah, he has that weapon in the book. Yeah.
What did Mark say? I like how it didn't feel connected to any other DC film. Stood on its own. It can be used any way they want moving forward. And Alan Moore's Night Owl is Blue Beetle.
Oh, you're right.
Okay, you need to clear that up for me. What's the correlation?
Please finish that statement up, because I didn't know that. And if there's something there, I want to know.
I would have marked that DC wouldn't let him use the characters he wanted for Watchmen due to the adult nature. So he had Dave Gibbons redraw and rename them. Okay.
But there's Owlman in DC. Owlman is a bad guy. And that's what they called him. No. That's what they called him in Watchmen, correct?
Okay, so Night Owl is Blue Beetle. Dr. Manhattan is Captain Atom. Comedian is Peacemaker. Oh, so they're okay. So they just use the same character traits and just transfer over to DC and then give him the names.
Huh? Because I thought Dr. Manhattan is in the DC universe. He fought the Justice League and Spectre had to actually change reality to change his reality. So now I'm really confused, because I'm a pretty avid DC fan and I didn't know that.
Okay, well, that's another education that we're having tonight. I'm glad that Mark is contributing that. Mark, do you wanna hop on with us? Let me know and I'll send you a link. But let's see. Let me.
Yeah, Mark, please clarify, because now I'm a little confused about Dr. Manhattan, because I'm pretty sure Spectre changed the reality that he, when he was trying to fight the Justice League. I didn't know he was a made up character just for the movie. Or is it something they just threw in after the movie because the movie was somewhat popular?
Okay, so with that said, as far as like the character development, I think the thing that made it light was all George Lopez,
right?
And George, this depiction of paranoid uncle, but via like he has
a genius
trait to
him. But isn't there several characters out there that did the same thing, that you know you don't expect him to be smart, but he's smart and blah blah blah.
I don't know. That's a thing. It was Was his uncle even part of the comic book?
No. None of the family either that I know of.
Okay. But
I did love the grandma.
Yeah, grandma was dope.
Grandma had I was thinking that they kept saying they're Mexican, but there was no Mexican kind of revolution. So she must have been a Sandinista because that time frame and the age would have put her in the Sandinista. So she's like Nicaraguan, I guess.
Well, that makes sense if she was like a guerrilla fighter back when she was younger.
Yeah, because that would have put the age pretty close.
And then
65. But she was dope. I loved her.
There he is. There's Mark. Mark.
Welcome Mark. To the show.
Mark.
What's going on, Mike?
Hey, let's go on a little tangent. I'm sorry out there in podcast land we're talking about the Blue Beetle, but I want Mark to educate me on Dr. Manhattan. And
this needs to be known. So Charlton Comics was a comic company that ran for numerous years back in the 60s and 70s. They went under. They created characters like Captain Atom, Peacemaker, Blue Beetle, The Question, numerous more. They had all kinds of stuff, but that was their superhero stuff. When they went under, DC bought them. And this was in the 80s. They were wanting to retool these characters and do something with them. They didn't know what they wanted to do. Alan Moore had Watchmen that he was getting ready to create, and he wanted to use those Charlton characters. DC said no, because you're about to do something with this comic book that the world has never seen before, and we don't think they're ready for. So they didn't want to destroy those characters to people getting introduced to them under their DC brand. So he took the comedian, and he took Peacemaker, named him the comedian, redrew him. He took Captain Atom, turned him blue, called him Dr. Manhattan. Silk Spectre was Nightshade, and so on. The Question from DC is Rorschach. And then if you move forward in comics, they get brought into DC Comics during Crisis on Infinite Earths.
There it is. That's what I was talking about.
Well, that's when they first brought the Charlton characters into DC Comics, when you ever first saw Peacemaker, any of them in DC. And then if you would check out the history of DC Comics, which is the 2-issue one-shots that they did that re-explained what DC Comics looked like post-Crisis. You see them in there as well. Fast forward, Watchmen is its own universe. It doesn't exist in DC Comics until 2016, when Geoff Johns decides to do Doomsday Clock. That's when they first introduced the idea that Watchmen universe and DC universe is one and the same. And they even retconned the concept that the New 52 universe was created because Dr. Manhattan was tinkering with things.
Reality, exactly.
After the fact, and he leaves Earth and goes on and does what he does at the end of Watchmen. One thing he did was he looked at the multiverse, and he moved Alan Scott's Lantern back in the Golden Age and changed events forever. And that's how they brought them into continuity. But that's the actual history of Charlton Comics getting bought by DC, and why the Watchmen characters are just analogs of actual characters that previously existed. That's why Archie, that Night Owl drives, is Ted Kord's Beetle. It is. It 100% is. Alan Moore wanted these characters. So he used those characters. He just had to have Dave Gibbons redesign them and change their names. 100% those exact characters, though.
Well, thank you for that knowledge. I didn't know that because, I'm a comic book reader, and you only read the comic books you like. So some of the stuff that, you don't read, you don't learn. So yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So I learned a lot because I thought, Dr. Manhattan and the Spectre had a little duel in Crisis, and that's what.
Dr. Manhattan wasn't in Crisis.
No, but I mean, didn't Spectre and Dr. Manhattan get together? They fought each other? Nope. I could have sworn I read that.
Nope. If you remember in Doomsday Clock, they had that huge buildup. The moment wasn't even about Spectre, which he would have been great to have in there because he is the wrath of God. You have to have his permission to even move through the spirit world kind of thing. But the whole moment was Superman. Like, the whole thing about Doomsday Clock is
right,
Dr. Manhattan found so fascinating. Yeah, they found so fascinating about this whole universe makes sense. This multiverse, everything fits in its place, but there's something about him. No matter what, in any world, in any universe, he's the center of it. So it was that moment where, the Justice League confronted him on Mars, and he just dusted him. He just put his hand out.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah, I remember.
But then we get down to the fight that Superman was in, trying to keep the world in order. And Dr. Manhattan and him come face to face, and they don't even have to come to blows because what Superman is, what he represents, and what he stands for. He did the one thing and instilled in Dr. Manhattan what he had lost with his humanity.
Is that the time Superman went to the sun and stayed in the sun for 1,000 years and became like the super Superman? No?
No, that was Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely's All-Star Superman 12-issue series. That's where he ended. And they revisit that concept in Justice in the 1 million stories, the DC 1 million. With the Ultra Prime Superman was a one-off, and he comes back all painted and all gold. Right. But those two things are kind of, that's like kind of Easter egg, because 1 million came before All-Star Superman.
Well, I'm glad you're on here with us to correct all my goof-ups, because like I said, I read the ones I like, and then I might skip something and not know. But, you know, yeah.
Red, you'll get this. You know the meme with Charlie in front of the cork board with all the red dots smoking the cigarette?
Right.
And, that's me when it comes to DC continuity.
All right, when did you watch Blue Beetle, Mark?
Oh, I watched it the day it came out. It was fantastic.
Okay, so let's
agree.
Yeah, it was so fun.
What do you think?
I thought it was a blast. I think what they did so well is they didn't try to reinvent anything. They took a cookie cutter formula of an origin story, and they focused on, let's make it fun, let's make it enjoyable, let's make it fresh feeling. And they did that. They took the most familiar concepts that have been done over and over and over again and made it so fun. And that I'm a huge DC fan. So all the Dan Garrett stuff in there, the Golden Age Blue Beetle, which Carapax goes back to the Golden Age. He wasn't a teched out guy. And then Ted Kord, of course, like that's my favorite Blue Beetle. I'm a Ted Kord guy, but I love what they did with tying the Scarab into Dan Garrett that it originally chose him. And Ted had been studying it his whole life. And just, man, it was just so fun. I had a blast. Like my heart broke two times in that movie.
Three times for me.
I think for me it was two. Like his dad dying was rough. But when they revisit it in a total Snyder style, like they did this cool thing with both Jaime and with Carapax, where you get your life flashing before your eyes moments. And when that happens with Jaime and his dad, like it was just amazing, and it was cosmic feeling and everything, and it was just I don't know, it just moved you emotionally. It did what it was supposed to do. And then they give you that same thing with Carapax. And when his mom looks at him and says, it's time to come home now, I'm like, God dang.
Yeah, that he was kind of a flawed character when it comes down to like just being that supposed to be the ultimate bad guy there. But he wasn't supposed to be the bad guy. It was always Serenity, right?
Yeah, I thought that was a really cool little twist right there. Because, I mean, he's just meant to be the muscle, you know, something to swing at and everything. You know, Susan Sarandon's your bad guy. You can't rightfully go punch her in the face. No one will really care. But what they did to her was 10 times worse. He grabbed that chick by the shirt and just drug her into a giant fire. I'm like, what? Wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, you figure she might live through that she had put in the tech herself, unless that character in the book wasn't like that, right? How much of the material that they used from the source really like get used for the movie?
Well, like, so Jaime Reyes first appeared in Infinite Crisis number 3, and by Infinite Crisis issue number 5, he's hanging upside down in the Batcave and the suit comes over him. So none of this is like pulled directly from like story-wise. Like the character, the suit, like the family, all that's kind of been built after the fact because he first appeared in that sense. So like it's not like this is based on a specific run or comic, but as far as like the characterization of Jaime, I think that they did great. I haven't read all of his stuff. That most recent miniseries, Graduation Day, I skipped on. I'm not a fan of the writer. And the book that's coming out, new series starts Tuesday miniseries, I'm skipping that one too. And despite the hype from the movie, you know, he doesn't get too much play. Most of the stuff like that I think is good about Jaime happened in like the Young Justice animated series.
In the books, are both Blue Beetle? Actually, how many Blue Beetles are there? And are they all in the same universe at the same time?
Three.
Yeah, Dan Garrett was a Golden Age. He was a detective with spandex. Ted Kord is the most famous Blue Beetle. And then Jaime came in 2006 during Infinite Crisis. And they've gone back and like made the mythos bigger, you know, like Ted Kord was studying the Scarab all along. Well, no, he wasn't. Not until they invented it when Jeff Johns created it in 2006 did they even start looking into that kind of stuff. Dan Garrett, like he came and went in the 40s and 50s. So they were smarter than to tie stuff to Dan, like him out like on these missions and searching through like and going on these adventures. He was looking for the Scarab the whole time. Like it's
yeah,
it's fantastic.
More of an Indiana Jones character.
Yeah, exactly. But it's great how they tied it in, like especially with the movie pointing out like it first bonded to Dan and we haven't seen it activate and bond to anyone else again. I'm like, yeah, that was super smart.
Does that get passed on to the next guy, or once it passes on, that power still stays within the last
movie? No, like this, like it was only not on Dan anymore because he's dead. It's like they pointed out to Jaime, like this isn't just a suit. This is infused on you all the way down to your DNA. Like this is in every single cell of your body. This suit is a part of you. The only way for it to come off of you is you dying.
Ah, okay.
And right. it has to choose you. Hence why Ted never had it. He just had the cool gadgets and everything. He was pretty much the steward of it at that point.
Right.
So you still get power from it, but not use it fully. Utilize the actual Scarab.
Yeah, and I don't know if Ted ever like exploiting the Scarab for its power source or anything. That was like his sister thing.
Ted had a he just had a brain fart. Sorry, a ward too, didn't he? Like Robin didn't Ted have a ward like that?
I don't remember if he did. He's just always in my memory bank rocked with Booster Gold, you know. Just always Ted and Booster like the real dynamic duo. And that's where my mind went with Ted missing,
right.
and knowing that they have
seen Booster Gold.
Yeah, they've already announced and confirmed that the James Gunn slate of stuff, if it ever comes to be with how things are. But Booster Gold is on his confirmed slate that they've announced. That so, like in my mind, Ted Kord's missing. What has Booster done now? You know, like
I
just pictured them having gone on a misadventure and Ted stuck somewhere.
But just to let you know that Booster Gold is my favorite DC character also.
Nice.
Let's follow up with Miss O's question. Like, how did you guys like the costume?
10 out of 10.
10 out of 10? Mike?
I didn't mind it. It didn't bother me too bad.
Okay. Did you guys get a lot of a Guyver feeling out of it instead of just Iron Man? More.
I got a more Guyver feeling out of it than myself. But Blue Beetle is a more of a Guyver than an Iron Man.
See,
it's one of his own body. It's fused to his own body. It's like Iron Man can come out of the suit and be Tony Stark, but basically Jaime's always the Blue Beetle, no matter if it's on him or not on him.
And then in my mind, there's countless characters that wear suits, whether they be mech suits, living suits, whatever. And like I don't equate everything to Iron Man like so many people do. Like I don't have there's no problem in my mind separating these characters as their own entity. That's like saying like, oh, he's wearing spandex. Is it like Superman? No, it's not. It's literally not. Just because it's a suit, think how many characters wear suits out there. There's tons of them. So I think it stood on its own merits very good, but it definitely, like to your point of like tech versus living with the Guyver thing, most definitely had Guyver feels.
Yeah, if you have that living organism, of course it's going to be that symbiotic relationship where in order for it to live, they always have to protect the host.
Mm-hmm. That was more Venom-like, right? That's more Venom-like, and they're talking to each other. And
absolutely, but in the comic book, he does that too. He fights back and forth with the suit, like saying like let's destroy, and Jaime's kind of a pacifist and doesn't let it happen. That's another thing I liked about the movie, that they incorporated that dichotomy between the suit and Jaime. Jaime's belief from his his family instilled in him, and then when it comes down to push to shove, Jaime gives in and says let's blast.
Yeah, that was one of the coolest moments when he sees that the pacifist angle wasn't working with that first battle with Carapax. And he's about to die, and he finally just tells the suit to, like, take over. He's like, watch and learn, Jaime. But by the end of it, how cool was that turn when Jaime lost control and kind of just started to let loose? Like, they tell you straight on, like, even if you're new to this, this suit is an end-of-world weapon.
Yes.
It's an alien end-of-world weapon. And by the end of that movie, Jaime's done let go, like, to a small degree, and that suit is just unstoppable. And the suit intervenes and stops him from crossing a line. And he's like, why are you doing this? Because we are not killers, Jaime. And I just got chills when the suit said that. I'm like, oh, man, that was great.
Okay, so the Khadija or Khajida, or what's the suit's name again?
I always just want to call it the exo suit, which is shame.
Did she flip the script? Like, take out Ivy's, I guess, pacifism than before? Is that what's happened?
Yeah.
The last fight scene.
Okay, wow. I didn't know it was really reactive to, or at least can conform to the hosts and take on their own, train of thought.
Kaiji is the name of it.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Yeah, so what I equated it to is the fact that they've been bonded for some time, you know? So, like, they're learning each other. Like, they're one entity at this point. It's that symbiotic relationship, like y'all said, you know, that's a host and a...
Miss So just said, like Venom. We already said that, but thank you, Miss So. We agree with you. It's like Venom.
And so what stuck out for you, Mark, as far as in the movie? What was the main thing that really got you hyped? Like an action scene or just a kind of relationship? Or
dude, there was numerous scenes. Like, that's what was so cool about it. They like, again, like, there's nothing new to the format of this, but they did it right. So, like, the little things, like when he catches the fist when they're going in to steal the key, you know, and he's there with Jennifer or Jenny or whatever her name was, and Care Pack catches him, and he runs up and he just catches the fist, and the suit comes over, and you're like, okay, let's rock, kind of thing. And then when he lets the suit take over, you get that same feeling again. There's definitely the end, those two moments that I mentioned that were emotional and everything, and just, yeah, there's so many moments that just give you that, like, you feel like you're into the movie moment. You know, you are feeling the emotion that they are trying to make you feel. They actually connect with the audience, and it just hit. And that hallway scene, like, this movie has a hallway scene, like Daredevil has a hallway scene. When he got loose from his constraints and he just goes through the hallway mad, like,
that was pretty badass right there. Great action there. Well, what about you, Mike? What stuck out more to you?
Well, you know, I'm a big softy, so the love of the family and the family dynamics really stuck out for me. I know it was sappy, and that's what they wanted it to be, but it worked. I'm not a real big Blue Beetle fan. I watched the cartoon. I read the comic, because, you know. But, yeah, I liked it. Like I said, when we first came on the air, I went in there as a 10-year-old boy watching a superhero movie, and that's what I got out of it. You know, I didn't go in there to critique it, like, you know, how he morphed in the costume, or, you know, the aliens are supposed to bring the scarab down. But, yeah, it worked. It worked. It worked. I'm sorry I didn't get the hype it did because of the writer's strike. I think if it got the writer's strike, it probably would have did a lot better.
And to be fair, to that point, this movie was made by the old guard pre-David Zaslav at Warner Brothers. It was made specifically to be released on HBO Max. And when he took over, he says, this is Warner Brothers. We don't make direct-to-video shit. And they gave it, they pumped it with a little bit more money to polish it up to release it in cinema. As of today, it was. I don't know if it hit 100 million yet, but it was getting close to 100 million with a 120 budget. It is yet to be worldwide released. This movie, most people don't know this, has not hit most of the international markets yet. It hasn't hit, like, Australia. It hasn't hit China. It has a release date for, like, mid-September in most of the international markets. So this movie is going to be
a late release date for the rest of the world.
I have no clue. I have not one shred of clue. I can't find any information on it. But I track numbers, though. I track stuff that I'm into and see how it does just for funsies, you know. But it started with an 80 budget for streaming, and they pushed it to 120 for theatrical, and they didn't put much into marketing. And I know people say, like, the writer's strike hurts it for them not being able to go around and, like, market the movie and stuff. But I'll be honest with you, I don't know how much that helps or hurts anything to begin with, because most of that marketing that they do is, like, going on, like, daily shows and stuff like that, talking about it. But I guess, like, because we're kind of dialed in as, like, fans already, so we're already aware of stuff.
But that's what they're trying to get. They're trying to get the non-fans. They're trying to get the 10-year-old boys who don't know Blue Beetle that like superhero movies and want to make mom bring them down there. That's
a good point, because when I took Monkey, my youngest, to her open house for preschool, a kid came in with a Blue Beetle shirt, and I said, I like your shirt. You know what he said? Yeah, it's a Transformer. I'm like, no, it's not. And then Finn walks up. He's like, that's Blue Beetle. I'm like, yes, it is.
Wow.
So, yeah, so that's true. There just must not be that exposure, like you're saying. It has to count for something. Yeah,
Blue Beetle's
that word like about
all the C-list villains. I would say Blue Beetle would be a C to D list superhero.
Yeah, and that's kind of his shtick, especially Ted Kord.
Yeah, because most likely with James Gunn, he's trying not to dive into the whole holy trilogy of DC right now, because now he wants to expose the bench warmers, right?
Yeah, that's smart move though.
Because we kind of need that now. We're like, well, what about the rest of the DC universe? Like, there just can't be Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. You know, there's other people out there, and same thing for Marvel.
And keep in mind, this is not a James Gunn project at all. His name is not associated with this film whatsoever. Yeah, we got one more movie after this to get through before we get to the James Gunn era.
Right. What movie is that?
Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom. It's originally slated to it's still slated to release this December. Guarantee you it's going to get pushed back though, because they still haven't even dropped the trailer for it.
But they already released the toys. I already purchased some of the McFarlane toys that are out for the movie.
Not for Aquaman 2, you haven't.
I picked up Black Manta the other day at Target.
That's not a movie version figure. That's probably one of the page punchers. Did it come with a comic book with it, or was it
No.
Just a standard one.
Standard one. It was the silver label, not the gold label.
Yeah. That's just the standard based off comics, because I don't know if you can see this, but this is just that's only McFarlane movie figures, and that's just the ones that I'm too lazy to put back in the box. I collect McFarlane movie figures, specifically the Batmobile up there with Keaton and stuff, but I watch them like a hawk. I actually have the Blue Beetle statue from McFarlane movie in my cart right now, because for this weekend only, it's only $20.
You mean the big one?
The big one with him like perched up with his arms up.
On the little kind of
it looks like a chimney almost.
Yeah, like a chimney. Yeah, I was going to say like a gargoyle stand.
Yeah. Yeah, but I got both the both Jaimes that they did with the battle mode and the wings, and then I got Carapax. So.
Yeah. Oh, fine. Okay, so go and follow up on Miss So's question. Does the ending leave an opening for a sequel?
Oh, absolutely.
Mike?
Absolutely. There's no question. I don't know where they're going to go with it. Now that Mark said, like, Booster Gold is in the DC, you know, universe, they might go with Booster Gold. I think that'd be a great thing. Him and Kord are buddies, so I think so.
Yeah, no, I'm not interested in Aquaman at all. Yeah, you saw the little after credit stinger, right, where they confirmed that Ted Kord is alive. Like, we got to go get Ted. Like, that's the sequel. We got to go get Ted, because Ted is who actually – because Jaime has his power, but he has no clue what to do with it. So this was him realizing his purpose, you know, like this is his father lays it out clear for him. This is what you were meant to do your entire life, or you wouldn't be here. This is what your life is meant for. So now that he understands his direction, now he actually has to learn how to be a superhero. He has no clue how to be one. That's what we need to do.
You know, they kind of copied that from Stargirl when the new Dr. Midnight got the glasses, and the old Dr. Midnight was in some limbo world telling her how to work everything. So he's
over in the Shadowlands where the Shade would put him over there. Yeah. Yeah, wow. Dude, that Stargirl show. Oh my God. So good.
Sorry, Red, for going into a tangent. I apologize for the podcast world. You shouldn't have introduced me to Mark, because me and Mark are going to go.
I'm a DC stan, bro. Check out my channel.
Yeah, check out Legion of Comics. Definitely, it's a great channel. It marks a great conversationalist. Like, really, you will find out a lot more stuff.
That's a really nice way of saying I ramble, and I do.
Oh, ramble is good.
Okay, ramble is good. Yeah, I'm all for rambling. Teach me something that I didn't read, or teach me something that makes me want to read.
Well, I'm kind of a grading scale now. Guys, where would you score this movie?
I was scoring on a comic book scale.
Yeah, yeah.
9.2 for Mike.
9.2 for Mike. Mark?
Yeah, I would honestly say that's accurate. I know that y'all use the CGC scale over here. I use the color scale, but since I'm over here, I'm going to give it a 9.2 as well. It's a good grade. There's definitely room for improvements, but like there's there's nothing that really took away from this movie other than little things that don't really matter. We haven't even touched on Uncle Rudy yet.
How big is Uncle Rudy in the book?
And the grandma.
Never even, I have zero experience with Uncle Rudy.
Okay.
Again, I haven't done, like I said, I haven't read a lot of the Jaime stuff. Just
I've read a lot of the Jaime stuff. Uncle Rudy ain't in there. Either is the grandma.
Mm-hmm. Hey, so hopefully there'll be some first appearances coming our way with those two, right?
As soon as I put it into a couple chats I'm in, like while I was still sitting in the theater about halfway through it, I got on there and said, I need a McFarlane Uncle Rudy now. Like they should have done an Uncle Rudy for the McFarlane wave. Like he was.
I want to buy his truck. The first truck.
Taco.
The taco.
Yeah.
Like, every Tacoma now, I'm going to call a taco. Yeah. I didn't realize that. Like, all I know, Tacoma is really it's popular in Hawaii, you know, in the whole Joe Coy jokes. But now it's really elevated to this whole taco thing. It's pretty dope.
Yeah, he legitimately like made my day watching him. Like him being like the crazy conspiracy theorist, but he backed it up with his capability of like knowledge of stuff, like how he had that he's prepared for everything. He had the defense network breakdown set up already for Cord Industries. He had like the truck that was like super durable and capable for the moment and everything. Then on top of that, like the whole thing with the trailer, like I was very reluctant when like you have the Batman is a fascist just thrown in the trailer. I'm like, yo, that's so stupid. That is just unnecessary. I feel like that's taking me out of like the comic world and placating to real world drama too much. But then you get in the moment and you realize that he's a Ted Kord fanboy and he's in Ted Kord's laboratory doing Ted Kord stuff, and someone had the audacity to say Batman in here. And by the time he said it in the movie, I'm like, yeah, Batman is a fascist. Okay.
But don't we all have an uncle that's on the fringe a little bit and maybe smokes a little bit too much and believes in Trump or whatever? I mean, don't we all have one of those in our family or somewhere in the tree?
We all have that crazy relative or friend, but sometimes it's a necessity when it comes down to like to push a story where that guy knows something that you know we don't all know. So he's a good. It's good to have him on the team, especially mm-hmm. if you act like that.
Red and I were speaking earlier that the grandma, I went to the assumption that the grandma is not his Mexican. More Nicaraguan because she's a freedom fighter, and at her age, it would probably be the Sandinistas that she would have been fighting for. So, but they didn't say that. They used the word Mexican, but there was no Mexican freedom fighters that would have been her age. So she had to be from Nicaraguan.
You also got to keep in mind as well. This is DC Comics. This isn't Marvel Comics. That's why he's in Panmeria. That's why Gotham exists. Why Metropolis exists in DC continuity. You have actual DC exclusive history, whereas Marvel just has New York, has wherever. You know, there of course there's some similarity places, but they also have the luxury of having their own history, so they can place her in whatever they want to place her in. So they don't have to like they're not beholden too much to like actual events kind of thing.
But no matter what, she was a complete badass.
Yeah, she was.
That's all we really needed to know was she was a badass and she was willing to fight to the end, and then group hug and cry, and that's what made the movie really wholesome.
And that was kind of also one of the things with the movie that I kind of lower my grade for is like I'm 100% think like the amount of like Hispanic culture that they put into it leveled up this film. It really like brought you into the emotional aspect of it. But I think they took it a step too far with the subtitles because like I watched this movie called Prey last year, like the new Predator movie.
Yeah, that was badass.
100% badass. It was about like takes place back in the day. It's Indians versus the Predator. And in the beginning of the movie, they're not speaking English, but you watch it fade from subtitles to them speaking English. Avatar 2, they're speaking in Na'vi, but then it fades to English and they point out, then it lets you as the viewer know that as I watch this entire movie, I'm hearing English, but they're not speaking it. Well, Blue Beetle is an American movie released in America. It's the target audience. It's the main monetary audience. And it's also pretty much a family film. I had my 3-year-old and my 5-year-old and my 16-year-old there with me when I watched this. So my kids, like I said, they're still hyped from that movie. They loved it. But there's numerous parts in the film, especially when Grandma was looking at the fortress, giving them their battle plans on how we're going to break in, where the subtitles weren't just for a moment. It was actually like a really long scene, and it felt even longer for me because my five-year-old's leaning up saying, what are they saying? What are they saying? Because he was really into the movie, and now they just chose to leave out all the kids that are there kind of thing. And it definitely was for the whole family, in my opinion, at least.
Yeah, I agree, Miss. So Susan Sarandon was a not a very good choice, but I think they had to have a big name star in order to draw other people to go see the film, besides just us comic book nerds. So people seen Susan Sarandon and go, oh my God, Academy Award winning Susan Sarandon. Maybe I will go see it because she was in it.
So you're saying George is not a bigger star than Susan Sarandon?
Well, it gets those moms that have those kids, and the kids might say they want to see it. You just
there we go. There we go back to my 10-year-old analogies.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't spell analogy without anal.
Yeah, Michael Douglas and Ant-Man's a good comparison.
That's a great comparison. You
remember that Zola, how the Blue Beetle, according to Uncle, that's how the Blue Beetle got into Jaime.
I think that Zolo carried a lot more people than they expected him to, though, because of his popularity with Cobra Kai. The Blue Beetle actor.
I was a big old Cobra Kai, but it's that's what the people behind me were saying. I had that's a dupe of Cobra Kai. And the big consensus around the theater, which wasn't really full, but everybody liked the movie when we watched it last night.
Yeah, there were, when we went and saw it, the theater was probably like a third of the way full, and we went on like release night, and people clapped. Like the theater actually clapped at the end of it. I'm like, yes.
It was just me and my friend Stouffer, just the two of us.
Did y'all clap? Is that what happened to your hand? No.
If you would have been on earlier, I would have told you what happened, but I don't want to go into it again.
Yeah, he has a cyst there.
I had surgery. And now it's starting to throb, so I'm holding it up. So I know it's not a good look, but, I got to do what I got to do.
We better cut this thing short before Mike's hand explodes. All right, Mark, where can people reach you?
Legion of Comics, Legion of Comics. Here on YouTube.
Mike, where people can reach you?
Evil Fit Cosplay on all the social medias except the X. You know how I feel about the X.
All right, and then commissions are still open for
commissions are still open, yeah, please.
Okay, so if you're looking for cosplay costumes and you need someone to make it for you, call Mike. Hit him up. And then you can find me here on this channel or somewhere on Facebook posting nudes. All right, guys, thank you for showing up. Thank you for
thanks for helping us. I appreciate that.
Thank you for being the encyclopedia for us. And we'll see you next time on, I guess, a couple weeks later.
Sunday Night C-List.
Later.
Thanks again for listening to another episode of the C-List Villains Podcast. You're cultivators of the comic culture.